Dr. Annie Sparrow made an amazing and very compelling presentation to the Foreign Affairs Committee in the Dáil this morning about the abuse and corruption of aid in Syria, which many people are completely unaware of. Annie, in terms of the suffering of Syrian civilians, how important is the failure of the world to focus on the abuse of aid?
It's the elephant in the room that no one wants to talk about. It's like this massive multi-billion dollar aid effort, which is led by the UN. And because the UN has to sort of give primacy of sovereignty of all member states over delivery of humanitarian aid, all aid that goes into Syria is completely controlled by Damascus. So we're talking about billions and billions of dollars into Syria alone, you know, which are going straight to Damascus, which are then completely controlled by the Syrian agencies. The Syrian government operates through SAARC. Every single agency has to partner with SAARC, the Syrian Arab Red Crescent, which appears to be a legitimate vehicle, but actually is, like all other associations in Syria, completely heavily populated by and controlled by the intelligence forces and the military. And this is part of a regime which has only ensured its survival for the past 50 years because not only of brute force, but because of very effective security apparatus. That's how you control an authoritarian regime. And so, you know, we talk about the failure of the sanctions. Well, sure, to some extent, you know, they've not had any effect on Assad's atrocities because they've been offset to some degree by the financial support from Russia and China and Iran. But, you know, we're ignoring this massive injection of aid into Damascus, which gives them with, you know, critical funds and resources and legitimacy, you know, funding exactly the same war criminals that are all on the sanctions list. And, you know, Ronnie, I mean, you know, this is about, you know, as a doctor who works in war zones, and, you know, I mean, I'm very familiar with neutrality, which is that principle where we're not going to take sides, we just have to create the space to get the job done. That's fine. Nobody cares, you know. We understand you might have to work with war criminals or, you know, dodgy characters if you're getting aid to the people who need it most. But when we clearly see that the people who need aid the most, you know, while the whole, you know, while 150 UN staff are shacked up at the Four Seasons, you know, under the pretext of security, which is the requirement by the regime, it's a hotel which is owned by the Minister of Tourism and by Samer Foz, you know, prominent businessman who is right now seizing large pieces of land that once were owned by Syrians. Anyway, it also offers the opportunity for continued surveillance by the intelligence forces. It's much easier to have everybody under the same roof, right? So you have the aid which is controlled by the Syrian Arab Red Crescent and all the government accredited NGOs, which are called NGOs, but are just run by Assad's family and friends. So they're just enterprises that are then, you know, also controlled by the government and not interested in delivering aid, but ensure that you have tight control over where it goes. And they make absolutely sure that they can't get aid to Daraya, which is 5 miles south of the Four Seasons, or, you know, Eastern Ghouta, 10 miles north. They can't get aid anywhere to where it needs, you know, it's really the most needed. And, you know, this is not only gives the Syrian regime, you know, the financing, you know, it means we're actually funding the killing machine that is responsible for the worst ever humanitarian crisis in modern history and for this mass exodus of refugees, which, you know, is part of this, you know, this global refugee crisis. But the UN, unfortunately, has then also legitimized it by working with a government that wouldn't even be a government. It would be a, you know, Hafez al-Assad seized power, you know, in 1971 and asserted presidency. That's an illegitimate move. But, you know, he's now passed his presidency along to his son, Bashar. And the UN, you know, as the principal actor in charge of, actually mandated with the international aid funding and coordination, is being hijacked and manipulated and exploited. And I think that, you know, this is one of the, you know, here in Ireland, you know, people are known, it's famous for their generosity. And, you know, to have that exploited and used, as I said, to fund the same killing machine is absolutely obscene.
I'm sure that many people listening to you will be as shocked as many people were when you made that presentation to the Foreign Affairs Committee, because as you rightly say, Irish people are generous. And the thought that politicians have been boasting about giving aid to vulnerable people in Syria and it's only going to basically underwrite the killing machine is a real indictment, but not just of Ireland, Ireland's government, but governments in general. I mean, it is a practical way of supporting the Assad regime, and it makes... It suggests gross hypocrisy on the part of the international community.
Well, yes, we need... I mean, the UN is only as strong as its member states. And, you know, it began out of World War II, you know, with this sort of global consensus to, you know, that was mandated on basic human rights and fundamental freedoms. And the evolution since that time where... all member states are now treated equally. So those countries which do have strong democratic institutions and judiciary and rule of law and respect human rights, of which Ireland is one, are given the same weight as countries, like Syria, which is an authoritarian regime, and, with absolutely no interest. It has a long record of civilian repression, brute force, massacres of the 80s, which include, tens of thousands of civilians, and, backed by China and Russia, then it gets to actually exercise weight in a role that the UN is incapable of. It's not been able to do anything except comply, with the regime's demands because of that primacy of sovereignty over delivery of humanitarian aid.
But the problem of the primacy of sovereignty means that we, through our governments, giving aid to the UN and the UN passing that aid on to the Assad regime to distribute, means we are complicit, not only in war crimes, but crimes against humanity, because we are effectively underwriting what you have described as a killing machine. Is that not a fair comment?
It's absolutely true. I feel that very strongly. I mean, first of all, I think UN, yes, because they are aware. And they do know that even though they claim to save millions of lives operating from Damascus, there is not a shred of evidence. You know, the White Helmets have demonstrably saved, 100,000 lives by pulling them from the rubble. I, as a doctor, if I say I saved a life, I can show you that child, But we don't, there's nothing to say that they are doing any good. And there is so much evidence of the harm where in exerting control by saying that all aid agencies have to partner through the Syrian Arab Red Crescent, that means 60% of this multi-billion dollar effort, more than $12 billion to date through the UN response received, then 60% of that goes through SAARC, of which 75% is then just seized by the government. The government's not only sort of bypassing the sanctions because it can get the UN to buy anything at once, and it does so in a way that where WHO, buys blood transfusion, blood bags, blood products, screening kits for bloodborne diseases for the Ministry of Defence, which controls the National Blood Bank, the same Ministry of Defence which is responsible for drenching the country in blood by targeting all the hospitals, the civilian homes, the schools, the bakeries, the mosques. This is one example of how tightly they control the aid, but how the government not only bypasses sanctions but profits from them. And we have, and I think yes, we are. This is all disguised and sort of covered up, it's very clear that countries themselves are not really interested in strong institution that the UN used to be, or institutions that can really work well, but self-interest and sovereignty are prevailing, and that means unless we as individuals really understand well what's going on, then yes, we are also becoming complicit, and enough is enough.
It was very moving this morning listening to you telling the politicians about Assad's intelligence forces or their minions basically filleting the aid of anything that might be helpful to civilians in opposition areas and then proceeding to destroy medical supplies that could save lives. How does that make you feel as a doctor?
Well, it's clearly absolutely criminal because you're pretending to deliver a humanitarian effort, but at the same time, very clearly and deliberately and intentionally withholding it. You know, on one level, there's the weaponization of healthcare, which means you turn people's needs for healthcare into a weapon against them by either withholding it, like we saw in the withholding vaccines, which the government did for years, but you know, from politically unsympathetic areas. So anywhere that would, and you had a Muslim majority, for example, for years, which is one of the reasons why polio came back so quickly after 2 years. We haven't seen that in any other war, and this sort of, you know, helps you understand the sort of dedicated efforts to where resources have always been skewed in the government's favour and controlled. And then when the humanitarian aid starts to flow, well, it reiterates that, and at the same time it starts attacking hospitals, executing any doctor who is known to help civilians who've been injured by protests or treats people from opposition health areas to date it has killed, you know, at least 900 doctors directly, executed them, you know, tortured them to death, disappeared them. Hundreds of hospitals have been attacked and destroyed, you know, and the public health crisis is unprecedented. And this is where, you know, the UN can no longer defend itself and say we can stay in Damascus because some aid is going to get to some people somewhere. That's not true, clearly, because we've watched the life expectancy drop from 71 years in 2010 to 55 years now, which is radical and unprecedented. That's worse than Haiti, worse than Libya, Sudan, Afghanistan. That's worse than the Congo. I mean, that kind of descent into the Dark Ages means that it shows that this is the real outcome. You know, millions of lives have not been saved. Millions of lives have not been protected. This is a crisis of protection. And the UN can't do that. And at the same time, it's actually working with and defending the same regime, which, you know, when you think about it, Ronan, it's a regime that has been in place because of brute force and because of building up and strengthening a very effective security apparatus, your Air Force security, military security, political, national. You know, there are so many different branches where with hundreds of, you know, with a staff that is in tens of thousands, you know, across Syria. They are in key roles in every single ministry. So the people in control of the aid response are either part of the intelligence forces or working hand in hand with them. What's kind of interesting as you understand this, is that in an authoritarian regime with all of these different security forces, they've actually had to form their own coordinating body amongst themselves.
Just to clarify that, because it certainly was something we found this morning quite surprising or shocking, the very fact the intelligence services have formed their own aid coordination organization to basically steal aid from the most vulnerable.
Well, they're already stealing it. It's just that, you know, because they didn't necessarily talk to each other that well before the war. I mean, they have different, you know, geographic and political sort of domains. So Damascus, for example, the most important and powerful are military and air force security. You know, to get over the fact that there aren't necessarily standard lines of communication or operating procedures, they had to actually coordinate between themselves to ensure, for example, so that the processes by which agencies are allowed into Damascus, which is exercised through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, so that you only get a visa if you are considered, you know, somebody that you can control or you're desirable, or, you know, like the current coordinator, Ali Zaatari. And he was with UNDP in Syria for, you know, several years, between 2004 and 2007. Now, UNDP has been in Syria since, you know, the 1970s and signed over a deal in 1975. So it's been, you know, part of this system of national control for a long time. And as a development agency, it's in contradiction to OCHA's role as an emergency agency. So you can see how there are many, many layers of control and corruption and exploitation that exercise to make sure that no aid gets to the people who need it most, because that is the whole intention of the regime, to destroy the civilian uprising who were, in the end, I mean, they were just protesting for basic human rights and fundamental freedoms. And they have a 50-year history of absolutely, you know, violent repression. So, yeah, I think really OCHA and the donors also should have done some more homework first, because you don't engage with a regime like that, you know, unless you actually have some ability to ensure that you will get aid where it is. And there is no way to do that.
It seems, therefore, that the case for stopping all aid that goes through the Assad regime is essential if the UN and donor governments do not want to be complicit in war crimes and crimes against humanity. They must stop giving aid if they were serious about ending the grotesque human rights abuses in Syria.
Well, yeah, we really want the UN. I mean, we look to the UN to form the, you know, the standards that we consider, you know, the minimum standards of humanity, the respect for human rights and for civil society, and as also as a platform where governments can talk to each other and get together to do the amazing things like eradication of smallpox. You know, the near elimination of polio is done through, you know, the ability of states to talk to each other in the interest of global health. And these, it's still an incredibly important, you know, institution, but you can see how Russia just either vetoes or violates the resolutions, and there's a level of paralysis there. And then it exercises sovereignty to be able to, you know, overcome the most important, you know, response to the worst humanitarian crisis. And you think, yes, yeah, so if we agree that all member states are going to be treated equally, well, then we either, then we have to actually enforce our own standards to say we are not going to stay in Damascus with a government who's still gassing its own children. I mean, the children, this is, you know, they are the most vulnerable. They always are. They die faster than anyone else. They get all the infectious diseases, and they, you know, they're so vulnerable to the malnutrition and the starvation that has been exercised as a weapon of war. Their lives are very short, and their futures are very dark. And to take actually, you know, for WHO and UNICEF in particular, who we look to as a guardians of global health and of child health and child rights, well, then it's time to say we are going to withdraw or downsize in Damascus, and we will establish a base, you know, a much stronger base in Turkey, where we can still achieve, you know, reach millions of people through the cross-border response from there and into southern Syria from Jordan, because at least then, and we will work with the Syrian partners who are doing the job, and we will, you know, there are other, you know, other, there are many agencies, you know, concerns there, Catholic Relief Services, the, you know, American equivalent of TROCRA are there. I mean, there are a lot of ones doing effective work, and then there are all the Syrian NGOs, USOM and SAMS and SEMA, and that are also working very, very effectively, and, you know, and this is a way where we can still use the aid to do good.
So therefore, to end our complicity through aid in these war crimes and crimes against humanity, we must divert funds or divert aid through that cross-border response. That's our only effective way of helping the most vulnerable, who are just not getting the aid at the moment.
In allowing the government to control the delivery of aid and insisting that it all be done through Damascus, and then the government's continued efforts to undermine cross-border delivery of aid. You know, the UN has to acknowledge this and stop hiding behind this claim, which is just, you know, there's no evidence for it whatsoever. And I say that hand on heart. The Syrians themselves tell me they would be proud of their government delivered aid according to need in government territory, which they don't. I mean, it's all funneled and controlled. So, but one must acknowledge it and then look to pragmatic solutions, like let's think about how we can still reach, because even though the war looks as if it's winding down after 7 years, you know, the fall of Ghouta, which, you know, it's like this is an area that was full of people who are smart, intelligent, you know, liberal thinking, you know, democratically minded. This is why, you know, so much effort went into destroying that, you know, that sort of pocket of, you know, of people who were strong enough to stand up and still say this is the right thing to do. You know, the government will continue its efforts in bombing hospitals and targeting other areas, and then the reconstruction aid will start. And if we allow that to go through Damascus, then we are just financing a regime that has been the cause of the humanitarian crisis, and that you could even argue, I mean, when you think about a calculated regime, you know, to create a humanitarian crisis in full view of the international community, it's kind of a cue for the UN to come running and to provide aid. And the fact that the sanctions imposed by the US and the EU and the UK, the three most important bodies, are also the three main donors of aid, you know, where it's a massive contradiction, which means, you know, let's think about how to stop being complicit and how to stop funding the very worst war criminals. And if we really believe in child health and in our ability to deliver aid and to provide hope, then what can we do to reassert ourselves and restore faith in the institutions, which is so important for the donors also. For the donors like Irish Aid and USAID and OFDA and DFID, but also for ourselves. We want to support people. We're very generous. The Irish are so generous. But we want to know that it's going somewhere. We don't want to just say, stop giving. Let's give somewhere where we know it's going to work.